Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
I'm Jamie Floyd, and for Brian Lehrer, Ai Weiwei is a Chinese contemporary artist who lives in Beijing but has been disappeared by Chinese authorities. His first major public art installation was just unveiled this week at Pulitzer Fountain at the southeast entrance to Central Park, an unveiling Ai Weiwei had planned on attending. He's a painter, sculptor, photographer, and architect. He worked on the famous Chinese National Stadium for the 08 Olympics, the Bird's Nest. But at this moment, he's most famous for being an agitator, political activist, and apparently a risk to the Chinese government. He was detained by Chinese authorities on April 3rd and hasn't been heard from since. If you pay attention to the art world, you've probably been asked through Facebook and Twitter to sign a petition to free Ai Weiwei. Over 100,000 people all over the world already have. Just today, China called on other countries to respect its judicial sovereignty and authority in the case, but it's still unclear exactly what the artist is under investigation for. Economic crimes is as specific as the Chinese government gets. Evan Osnos is the New Yorker staff writer in Beijing. He profiled Ai Weiwei last year for that magazine, and Evan Osnos joins me now to explain why his art might be seen as a threat to the Chinese government and why the detention of Ai Weiwei matters. Evan, welcome to WNYC.
Glad to be here.
So this is not the first time Ai Weiwei has been detained. What's your best guess why he was detained this time, and why, if you think so, this time feels different? Lay out the circumstances of this detention.
Well, the strange thing about this detention is that it says more about the atmosphere in China these days than it does about the things he may have been or not been doing or not doing recently. In a sense, over the last few years, he's taken on a more confrontational position with the government. It began really a few years ago when he was an artist like any other, and he became increasingly concerned about what he thought was the lack of transparency and accountability in the government. So he launched some very high-profile campaigns to try to encourage reform. For instance, he started collecting the names and the numbers of children who died in the Sichuan earthquake of 2008 because his argument was that they died unnecessarily because money was misused and their schools were poorly constructed. And then you fast forward over the next couple of years as his relationship deteriorated with the government, there was never a moment where it was very clear that he was doing anything that was obviously more provocative than it was the month earlier. But this spring, things changed. And what changed was that the Middle East uprisings put the Chinese government on high alert, and they became suddenly much more concerned about the people that they considered dissidents and the people that were criticizing the government. And there was a crackdown, and he was swept up in that crackdown.
So people are saying that the suggestion of economic crimes, and I guess that phrase is in quotes, is preposterous. Would you agree with that?
Well, we don't really know because they haven't come forward with any of the evidence. In fact, so far what they've said is that they are investigating him for unspecified economic crimes. That in the past, when they've used that term, it often applies to tax evasion or something else. But of course, we have to point out that this is very often a crime it's a charge that's applied to people who have been persistent government critics. So it very well may turn out that he will go on trial for economic crimes, and that may put him away for the next several years. But that may not, in fact, be the reason why he was on the radar screen in the first place.
I don't think the real reason.
Around here, nobody believes that's the reason why he was in custody.
And there has been a crackdown recently, not just on artists, but on others, intellectuals, lawyers. What's behind the crackdown beyond just Ai Weiwei?
Well, this has been the most dramatic crackdown we've seen in a number of years. I mean, going back for a decade or so, the government has made a systematic effort to go after the people who have been the most outspoken, who have been active online, for instance. And what it indicates is that people who a few years ago might have had the space to be able to, for instance, run an NGO or to promote legal reform, to promote training for lawyers or cleaning up the courts, people like that have now found themselves in the position of being regarded as a threat to the government. And so what we've seen over the last few months is that at any given point, there has been about anywhere between 50 and 150 lawyers and activists and writers who have been in custody, and they go in and out of custody, in some cases without ever charges being filed. In some cases, there are people who were picked up months ago and have yet to be seen again.
You mentioned Ai Weiwei's efforts to publicize the names of the school children who died in the 2008 Sichuan earthquake. Can you give some other examples of his politically charged projects?
I'll give you an example of one that I watched him undertake. This was last year. There was a case in which Ai Weiwei was beaten up by some police a couple of years ago in the western city of Chengdu. And in a lot of cases in China, if that happens, most people walk away. They basically say, I had a run-in with the government. I want to put this in the past, and I want to wash my hands of it. Ai Weiwei wasn't comfortable doing that. What he said was that I need to show that the system is not working. And so what he began to do was to do what other people wouldn't dream of doing, which was to file the paperwork to try to say, I was beaten by police, and I demand an explanation, and I demand retribution for this. I demand some sort of judicial solution. And so I watched him go to the courthouse over the course of a couple of months, and he would go to the police station, and he would try to file the paperwork. And it was a sort of theater of, obviously, the absurd. I mean, he knew that there was no way that by going through all of these offices that he was ever going to get a real solution. But what he wanted to show, as he put it, was that the system in its own definition and that the system as it constructed itself was not working. And so that became his project. That was his art.
And we do want to hear from any of our listeners who've been paying attention to the Ai Weiwei story, his art, if it's resonated with you or if you are an artist or Chinese. Has the story had a chilling effect, do you think, on artists in China? 212-433-9692, 212-433-WNYC. I'm Jamie Floyd in for Brian Lehrer, and my guest is Evan Osnos, New Yorker staff writer in Beijing. And Evan, you wrote that one of the underlying questions posed to journalists and others there in Beijing, where you are, is whether the world is paying undue attention to this case in light of the fact that the vast majority of the Chinese public has never heard of Ai Weiwei. So what's your own response to that?
This is a real struggle as somebody who writes about China, thinks about China. When we pick a case, for instance, like Ai Weiwei, and we're trying to decide how much does his case tell us about China today, what we're really asking is the story of China in 2011, is the story that the country is in fact much better off than it was 20 years ago, that it has far fewer people in poverty than it did, that it has far more people who now have an education than it ever did before, or is in fact the story of China that it has these cases of people who are picked off the street and are then subjected to they are tortured in some cases, people are put away without trials that we would consider to be international standards. Is that the China, or is China in fact the more prosperous place that we talked about? And that is a constant struggle. And I think in the end, what it comes down to is that you have to allow these two thoughts to coexist at the same time. And saying that Ai Weiwei's case is important and saying that it tells us something important about China doesn't mean that all of the other positive things that are going on every day don't exist. But as a country that now wants to be treated as a superpower and that is being regarded as a superpower as it should be, it also has to be prepared to be in the spotlight and to have the cases that are of concern to the international community be treated publicly. And, it happens in American life, too. If there are cases that we think are of concern, American journalists will go after our own government with incredible energy and scrutiny. And it's often hard to, the Chinese, sometimes on the Chinese government side, they feel that foreign journalists are especially hard on them. And it's our job to point out that, this is the same way we operate in every country.
All right, let's take a call from here in our country. David in Rego Park, you are on with Evan Osnos, who writes for The New Yorker about artists in China. And I think you have a specific question for Evan, so please go ahead.
Yes. Yes, I'm an artist, and I can know what we can do in New York City to show our support. And also for Tony Kushner, who was denied by the SUNY trustees an award, and that's not covered by WNYC. Why is that not covered?
I believe I did hear it on the air this
morning.
Why
are we talking about it? Why are we talking about China? Why don't we talk about the fact that we can't give our Tony Kushner an award?
David, I've just made a note, and we will discuss it at our editorial meeting.
Why are you ignoring me?
David, thank you for your call. And I want to come back to Evan Osnos and ask what I think was a very good question by David in Rego Park. What can artists and I suppose others who care about Ai Weiwei's situation do to support his cause and, show their concern to the Chinese government, especially if they're all the way here in the United States?
Well, you know, I'm sort of watching it from far away. As a journalist, it's been interesting to see the ways in which Ai Weiwei's case has resonated with people abroad, perhaps in ways that other cases haven't. I mean, there are a large number of other cases that have been, in fact, percolating through the system for months that other people haven't heard of and that are of equal concern. They're of equal concern to the U.S. government and, I think, to people abroad. For instance, lawyers, names like Li Fangping, who Americans may not have heard of, but are in fact also cases of significant concern. So I think there are in fact now a number of campaigns that are going on overseas, obviously not something that I'm involved with as a reporter, but these are campaigns that are designed to bring attention to individual cases of concern like Ai Weiwei's. There are petitions floating around. And I think that these are going to be a part of the new reality for China as it plays a more prominent role in the world. It's going to be, in effect, put under the spotlight whether it chooses to or not. And I think that's just part of being a member of that community. So it's been a learning process because it can feel very uncomfortable to the Chinese government to be held to a standard that it thinks is inappropriate.
Do you think that his detention has been chilling for other artists there, or do you think that it will prove to steel the resolve within the community to ramp up dissent? I know, as you've written about in the profile, the community, the art community that surrounds Ai Weiwei is a strong one, but what will the effect be?
Well, he had a complicated relationship with the artistic community here before he was detained, in the sense that one of his most persistent messages over the last few years has been that he thought that Chinese artists needed to be doing more, that they needed to be more outspoken, and they needed to stand up for ideas more than they did. And he thought that ultimately it was not okay to be an artist or a writer in China today and not speaking out for principles like free expression and so on. So he had a tense relationship with his peers. And the truth is, I don't think recently, as much as his detention has really sent a chill through the creative community here, it's been striking to see how people are, in fact, being they have been intimidated. I think people these days are not racing to go and put themselves in the position that he put himself in because the costs are very high. So it's not a moment in which people have responded by saying, well, the only solution to his detention is for us to go to the ramparts together. That's not at all the case. I think people have decided to hunker down and try to wait this out.
And say a little bit more, Evan, if you would, about how the arts in China have changed. You suggested this a little bit in a previous answer, but the West's interest in Chinese art has grown exponentially in recent years, over the last decade or so. And the Chinese government is pouring lots of money to bring American artists and curators to China. So clearly the government must be recognizing that the arts are important, not just culturally, but politically and economically as a bridge to the West, or is it not that focused and controlled?
Well, you're absolutely right that art really has been flourishing in China over the last few years in some important ways. I mean, if you go back to the beginning of the reform period in China, which was at the end of the 1970s, beginning of the 1980s, there was an explosion of creative energy. And over the course of the 1980s, you saw the contemporary art movement really take off. And people who had been held back essentially in the state system or out in the provinces working on fields in the midst of China's political upheaval suddenly found that they could really express themselves. And then, of course, over the 20-year period, you saw this sort of ebb and flow of creativity. There were moments of openness and then moments of real pressure. But over the last 10 years, what it seemed like was that the Chinese government had realized that having a vibrant contemporary art world made China look good. I mean, people would come to Beijing, they would go to galleries, they'd go to museums, and they would see that there were things happening. And at the time of the Olympics in 2008, a lot of visitors came and went to what's known as the main art district in Beijing. It's called 798, and it's a cracklingly creative place, and there's a lot of activity. And, you know, in a way, it's become more awkward to be a successful artist here because it, with so much money floating around, with foreign collectors and Chinese collectors willing to pay millions of dollars for a Chinese piece of art, it becomes, the costs are much greater to stand up and speak out for principles that may imperil your career. And this is a remarkable thing about Ai Weiwei. There was obviously a lot of interest in his work, but his work never sold at the highest levels that other Chinese artists' work sold for. And as he put it, he didn't like the system. He would sell his art in ways that made sense to him. But I think there were parts of the interaction between money and creativity and power in China that he found unsettling.
Well, people in our listening area can see Ai Weiwei's public art piece called Circle of Animals, Zodiac Heads. It's 12 bronze sculptures around the Pulitzer Fountain at the southeast corner of Central Park. That's 59th and 5th Avenue. It'll be on display until July 15th. I want to say thank you to Evan Osnos for your time today.
Glad to be with you.
And coming up next, our Bird Week finale. There is breaking news. Baby hawks are hatching. I'm Jamie Floyd in for Brian Lehrer. Stay with us.